This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Wendy Ying from Sarasota, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 5th. This episode is brought to you by the American Driving Society. Good morning, horse world!
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the monthly driving episode with Dr. Wendy Ying. And we are here the first Thursday of every month, and you can go back and take a listen to all the past driving episodes at drivingradioshow.com. That has them. So, Wendy, I don't know if we survived or not, because we're recording this about a week ahead of the show before the hurricane hits. We did that so we'd make sure we got it done in case we did lose power. So I don't know. We'll know next week what the story is. But we have a good show planned for you today. We're taking a look at mini and pony carriages with Kathleen from the Carriage Association of America. And then in the traditional Chinese medicine segment, we're revisiting CBD oil. There's so many questions about CBD oil and horses now being posted everywhere. We thought we'd take a look at that again. And then the Tremont training tip, what's she talking about this time?
She's talking about being organized and making lists and journals to make your life easier.
Do you really do that?
No, but she's super organized. She's super organized. That's why she's so successful.
But I married a list maker, see?
Exactly.
That's why I married a list maker, and my partner in the Florida Podcast Network is a list maker. Jemmy's a list maker, like incessant list maker.
Kyle doesn't make lists. Well, actually, yeah, he does. He makes post-it notes, and he's totally organized, and that's why everything's going so great for me right now.
See, you and I need to marry those people, right? That's who we need to marry, because that's if we didn't marry those people, our life would be a shambles.
Yep.
More than it already is. Well, it's time for Carriages 101, that time where Kathleen from the Carriage Association of America joins us to talk about carriages and driving and wheels and harness and all of that stuff that's involved in this cool sport we do. And today we're talking about one of my favorite topics, ponies and minis.
Yes, they're everyone's favorite. They're so smoochable, you know, those little noses.
I just went out and gave my little Hackney pony an apple just 2 minutes ago. We have a new neighbor up here right beside us, and we met her, and she drives the cutest little mini called Ricky Bobby.
Oh, yeah.
And Ricky Bobby is a trip. So we went out driving the other day, and Ricky Bobby went along. So it was me, Jennifer riding her big, big thoroughbred, and then me with my medium-sized Hackney pony, and then Ricky Bobby, who's just about the top of mini size. That little pony kept up. It lived up to its name, Ricky Bobby. That Ricky Bobby was not going to be left behind. So it was so cute to watch. It was so cute.
And that's the thing about ponies and minis. When you talk about them, even as you're listening to the story, you get the biggest smile on your face because you just know. You can picture it in your head, and it's just cute.
We must have looked like quite a combination with the big thoroughbred, with my Hackney, and then the mini trailing behind. People seeing us must have thought, well, there's a combination.
So, and I have to tell you, if you're going to go into the show ring, it's not a bad combination to have, because my mom has her minis, my dad used to show his pony, his Fjord, and then I had my standardbreds, and so we didn't compete against each other, but we could be at the same show. Mm-hmm. And so it made family harmony much better.
nobody was whining.
Right. Nobody complained about who beat who that week. Yes.
Well, what are we talking about?
So we're talking about minis and ponies today. And one of the things that happens is people think that minis just kind of puffed up from the air of some cute factory and they just suddenly appeared. And that's not the case. We know that they go all the way back to 1650s, 1700s. We know that they were in Louis XIV, who's the Sun King. He had a menagerie, and they were definitely in there. And there's definitely other reports of miniature horses being out and about. Napoleon III's wife had a carriage pulled by a mini. So they've been around for quite a while. However, we didn't call them miniatures. We called them ponies. And even when you get into talking about catalogs, carriage catalogs, they were always talking about ponies. We have several examples of that, but they go down to 33 inches in the catalogs. You just have to be paying attention to what you're looking at to be able to see it. So we've definitely have a long history of miniature horses existing. We just called them by a different name back in the day. And so
in the catalogs, they used to have, they would tell you the size of the carriage for what horse.
Correct. So they would have something that would be appropriate for a 33 to 39 inch pony, a 40 to 45 inch, and then a 46 to 52 inch. And then sometimes they would also sell a cob. But that would all be in the same catalog.
You know, I imagine it was like the Amish when I grew up in Lancaster County. You know, the adults all had horses and the kids all had pony carts and ponies. And that they learned to drive on ponies. And I'm sure back in the day before cars, that's what happened too, right?
It was.
That was your training wheels.
They were. And actually, I have to laugh because back in the 1914, 1916, it really came up to start as a premium. If you bought something or to run a contest, you could win a pony in a carriage. Sometimes it was a pony in a cart, or excuse me, a saddle. But a lot of times it was a pony in a carriage. And awesome. There was things that, you know, I think you probably have had Orange Crush soda at some point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they ran a thing. This was in 1922, so a little bit later, but you saved the coupons that came with the bottles, I believe, and you could submit them, and first prize was a pony and cart.
Oh, my God. What a great prize.
Yes. And this happened quite a bit. It was very normal, and particularly in places that maybe, you know, because of weather or for whatever reason, there wasn't a lot of excitement. This was an easy way for newspapers to bring excitement to their newspaper and to draw traffic downtown. So what they would do would they put in an ad in the newspaper. And an example of this would be in North Platte, Nebraska. And in February 26, 1915, there was an ad that saying that word had been received that the pony and outfit, meaning the carriage, to be given away March 18th would be arriving today or tomorrow. And that's the only photograph in the paper is of a little pony that was supposed to be riding.
Oh, my God.
And in February in Nebraska, I'm guessing that there's not a lot of excitement other than maybe Valentine's Day.
Yeah, and shoveling snow.
Right. So this gave you a reason to go into town and see the pony, and they would put him pretty much in a storefront window so you could see him. And before that, the carriage would be in there or the saddle so that there was something to heighten your senses and get you excited about it. And the kids, just like that puppy in the window, it would be that pony in the window.
Can you imagine every kid in town wanted to win that pony?
And so they did a lot back then to promote that type of thing. And then correspondingly at that point in time, the American Shetland Pony Club did a promotion as well to promote the breed. And so for a while there, everybody just needed a pony and a cart to drive in. We had talked before about the Irish jaunting vehicles, which Wendy had owned one. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes talk about governess carts. And I was trying to figure out.
I had one of those too. Of course, I had one of those too.
And they're for the really young ones that are driving with their governess. And I was trying to figure out how to describe them.
I don't think Wendy ever had a governess, to be honest.
Go ahead.
No, but I had a car. I had one of those.
Wendy was never chaperoned. That's why
she got in so much
trouble.
I put the Jack Russells in them, but they are really uncomfortable to drive because you have to sit sideways.
Right. And so basically, as far as a description, I'm like, if you took a small hot tub and put it on wheels and put a door in the back, that's pretty much what it is.
That's funny. That's exactly a good description.
That'd be great for a for costume class.
Yeah,
fill it with water. And...
And so that was what a lot of people were used to, was this idea that you would keep the kids kind of contained, and it was something that an adult drove. But during this time, we started really getting into vehicles that the kids could drive. And part of that is because we also had young royal children, because I'm pretty sure that the first royal child that we had had a royal pony. I don't have documentation to prove it, but I'm pretty sure that that happened. And as they were driving, so too did the rest of society follow in that path. And so that's where they get these vehicles. A lot of times, which probably the governess cart, was it wicker?
Mine had wicker on the, the top half was wicker.
So a lot of times they're either wicker or natural wood. And that's so that the kids don't scuff up the paint, just like don't turn a kid loose next to your brand new car because they might scuff up the paint or something. The same problem, didn't want to have to repaint your carriage all the time. And so they went either with wicker, which was at that point in time pretty easy to replace and fix, or something natural.
Yeah.
But when they decided to paint them, they did go pretty bright. There was a lot of red involved, a lot of reds, blues, and greens. And so have you ever owned a pony vehicle?
The little governess cart I had was a pony vehicle. And actually, when I first started driving, I had these two little tiny ponies. One was a Hackney and the other one was a Section C, but he was little. They were like 12 hands. So that's why I had some little pony vehicles for them. They were super cute.
And Charlie Poppy, who's been on here before, he has a lot of pony vehicles. Oh, his are usually yellow and black, or cream and black, off cream.
He has the best pony. If you're a pony lover, Charlie Poppy, you have to go visit him. He has the best pony accessories. His carriage house, incredible. The mink, what about the mink collar? You know the mink collar he has for the Hackney ponies?
Yes. So it's literally a mink, like a mink stole, but for a horse. Now, what I have in my office right now that's temporarily on loan to me from Charlie is a sledge collar. Have you ever seen a sledge collar?
No.
Now, what's that?
So sledge is a type of plant fiber. So it's essentially, do you know about straw collars? We used to use straw collars sometimes on a coach or something.
Oh, yeah, your spare tire.
Yes, they're like a spare tire, or if a horse got a sore shoulder, you could punch the straw where the collar would lay, and create a little bubble in the straw so it wouldn't touch the sore spot, and then continue home. The sledge collar is a slightly less decorative version of that, and it flexes so it could fit any size pony. In this case, it could fit right over their head. And they could go home with that as a collar. They sometimes use them also either sledge or corn husk collars in the South, where the horses got really sweaty because of the temperature, the humidity, and it would not possibly rub them the way a leather harness would and a collar would. But the sledge collar, we have a video of it on our Facebook page, which is Carriage Association of America. And it's just cool. I'm sorry. There's just no other way to describe that. It's just really cool. But it moves, and it really took some talent to figure out how to braid something like that and make it work. And then that's plant fibers. I'm going to try to make one with cattails, but it's that type of a fiber. You want a longer plant.
You're
going to
make one yourself?
I'm going to try. I currently have my trailer is full of cattails drying, And that's on my plan to do. So
I never heard of a corn husk collar either. I'm learning all kinds of stuff today. So
they were pretty popular down in the South, and they still on some of the, you know, the farms that are doing 18th century farming, they still have them.
Maybe
you can give me some advice on how to make one of these cattail collars for these minis that we're going to race down our street.
Well, that's what I'm making mine for, is our minis, because I'm like, I don't know that I can make a full size one. But I worked this summer to learn how to make wisps, which is what they used to use for grooming. Mm-hmm. And they used those from like the Greeks all the way up to the mid 1800s. And so you have to figure out how to braid them and how to let them dry and different things. For me, it's been a learning process. I'm sure that there's somebody that just has that natural talent and just can put them together. But mm-hmm. I had to learn how to braid them and everything like that. So that's
this I can't is my wait goal. To see this. I can't wait to see it. Yeah. It's gonna be great.
So over Christmas, we'll probably do that. I get a week off and we'll do that project. But going back to our carriages, you could get things like that. This would be an accessory that you might need for your carriage, is these different type of collars, depending on where you were. But Charlie has a tremendous collection of pony items. If you're ever up near his home in Cincinnati, it's worth a stop. And call first, though. And most of the carriage companies that we're going to talk about today are from the Cincinnati area. At one point in time, Cincinnati was a tremendous maker of carriages. And so one of them was the Eagle Carriage Company. They made some very, very nice carriages. They were both wicker and natural, but you could also get them painted. And they had a deal with, if you bought the complete outfit for a pony vehicle or sleigh, which meant the sleigh and the harness, then you could get a free pony driving whip as well. But pony driving whips back then went for $5.25.
Oh my God.
Of course, the harness sold for $15.60.
$15?
$15.60. Plumes were $5. You know, the feathers that go off the top of their head to make them look fancy.
Those. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Those I can't believe that they were $5, but yes. So there was the Cincinnati Carriage Makers Club honored the Eagle Carriage Company, who was owned by a gentleman called Charles A. Fisher. And he had this ad campaign, and this is one of those times where you really wish you could see it. They had a stork flying with the baby. And right behind it was an eagle flying with the carriage, because whenever you had a child, you should have a carriage. And so
that's so great. That would make me have a baby if I could get a carriage with it.
I know. And they actually made a poem. I think they made a poem for everything back then. But they made a poem, and I'm going to read it to you. This was read at the Cincinnati Carriage Makers Club, I believe in 1914. And it goes, Charles A. Fisher oft raises a holler to get the eagle on the dollar, to fly down to his eagle's nest and stop there for a little rest. The best thing Charlie ever did was to specialize to please the kid. For with the youngsters, it's a fact, the pony and car will always attract. I know whenever I go to the zoo, I have to spend a quarter or two to let my little one ride in a Fisher cart to satisfy their childish heart. And I feel that as long as the stork will fly, Fisher is going to get nicely by.
So, okay, what I got out of that is they gave carriage rides at the zoo.
They did.
And they should. You could go People are there to see animals.
Yes. Yes. So there's this whole other poem thing and writing about the fact that you could go to the park then and get a carriage ride, and little brother or sister could also ride on the pony. You were considered a big boy or big girl when you could drive the pony by yourself and you didn't have to sit in the saddle and have somebody walk beside you.
That's so cool.
Glenn, you're a big boy.
I know. I get to drive the pony by myself now.
Yeah.
Well, you can harness by yourself now.
Yes,
which is
I
more
can
important.
Do all of that. That's true.
Yes.
You can harness by yourself?
Shut up, Wendy.
He claimed that like a month or so ago. I have not seen visual proof, but that's what he claimed.
Hey, I can even, yes, I don't even need Jennifer to hold the pony anymore. We've gotten Scooter, believe it or not, to the point where he stands along the rail, and I harness him up, and then we go.
That's really great.
I know, and I can park him myself, too. Just pull up to the rail. He stands there, scratches his head while I take his harness off. It's perfect.
Good, yeah. Good.
Now, Kyle doesn't want to learn how to harness or tack up.
Well, no, because there's responsibility in that.
Yeah, he's like, no, you better do it, and then let me know when it's ready, and then I'll come out.
Yeah, exactly. He's a smart man. See, I made that mistake. Here I am.
Yes, once you learn how to do it, you're roped in.
See, I was stupid when I did this horse husband thing, because I wanted to learn how to do everything so I could be helpful, instead of being the one that didn't learn how to do anything so I didn't have to help. There's two kinds of horse husbands, and I dove in with both feet and should have just done a Kyle.
Yeah.
And here we are.
I have to say that the ability to hold a horse and keep your mouth shut is a skill that many horse husbands could learn.
Yeah, I was never good at that.
Yeah.
More Jennifer will tell you,
how to put the saddle on or the harness.
Which is why she didn't want me to go a lot of times. It's like, oh, you just stay home. It's fine. No problem. And I always thought she was just being nice to me. No, she didn't want me there.
I find it funny that in many of these ads, they talk about the fact that the kids can go off and do their own thing, essentially. They did make some that you could take mother along with, and they were the fancier ones. But it, for the most case, the concept is just to turn them loose. And they would pile these kids in the carriage. There would be like 6-8 of them and some of them. And they would just go down the road and with a little pony going. So, you know, we like our spouse or something, someone significant other to be involved. But when you're a kid, you want them to hang out with other kids and go without the parental responsibility there. But and today, if you go out driving with a young one, we do encourage helmets because even though you're not on the horse, you can still get hurt. So, and actually, I forgot to get the documentation about this because I just now thought about it. But Paul May has a clinic coming up, and it doesn't make a difference if you have driving experience or not. If you're a junior driver, the clinic is free to you.
Oh, that's great.
We'll have to get the dates for you, but it is coming up in September. And that's a really great offer from him to be able to do that. And his name is Paul May. It's M-A-Y-E. You can find it on his Facebook page if you need to.
Is it in Virginia?
Virginia?
Yes, I believe so. And I think he's looking at doing them in multiple locations. But that's the first date that he has is in Virginia. And it's going to be very exciting to see somebody get out there and promote driving in the youth. And make sure that cost is not an issue.
I have to tell you something about Paul and his wife, Cheryl. If anybody's interested in going to these clinics, they are fabulous pony trainers and have been breeding and showing Welsh ponies for years and years and years. And they're also, they have their own kids, but they've also brought up like generations of kids with the ponies. So they're really, they're perfect for this situation. So I think anybody with kids that is interested in driving, they should really take advantage of this opportunity.
Yes, it doesn't come along, and they've got good horses there. He's got the skill and quite frankly, the temperament, because not everybody does, to take on a young driver that doesn't know or whatever and bring them along. And it doesn't make a difference if you're interested in pleasure driving, combined driving, breed driving, if you have a junior. Paul can teach you that. I think that this is coming up on September 28th is when that's going to be. It's the Evolution Driving Clinic, September 28th.
We'll get him on before that too on the Horses in the Morning to talk about it.
Yes. He's going to cover everything from basic safety and harnessing right on up to, cones and different things like that, whether you want to drive single pairs or even fours. And that's the great thing about that. So if you're taking your own on horse, I think it's only $30 for stabling even. So that's a great event. And that's one thing that when we talk about ponies and minis, they are going over into the show world. You can find them in the Shetland show world, which so breed specific. They have the Shetland and the miniature horse tend to run together. And then there is also the possibility of going in and doing combined driving. And they're a little bit harder to find things for the VSEs, which is a very small equine, which is what term some people prefer over minis. And but you can definitely get into the ponies with the combined driving. I think your next speaker is going to be talking about that. And there's a lot of things you can do with ponies now, and there's a lot of different carriage options out there. There are people that specifically deal in pony harness and pony carriages. So if you're looking for something, it's definitely available out there.
Well, thanks, Kathleen. That was so fun talking about ponies, and I can't wait to see your homemade harness for your little minis.
Yes, thank you.
Be great.
We're looking forward to doing that.
You have to share pictures with us.
Well, our show, as always, is sponsored by the American Driving Society, and they have this program called Hours to Drive, and I noticed that they extended the deadline to get your hours in to October 15th. So what is Hours to Drive?
Oh, Hours to Drive is a super fun program that you should be participating in, Glenn, because it doesn't, you know, you just count the amount of time you spend driving. So even if you're practicing or you're taking a drive down the road, or even if you are borrowing your friend's horse and you drive your friend's horse, you can still participate as a member of the ADS, and you keep track of your hours that you're out enjoying your horse and carriage, and then you send it in to the ADS. And there's different markers, different levels that you can get, and you get a little pin at the end of the year, and then you can send your picture in of you and your horse and get it into the WHIP in the Hours to Drive issue.
All right.
It's really fun.
Cool. Well, that's great. And also, I noticed that I didn't get mine yet. The August WHIP has come out. Where mine went? I got to find out. Because the WHIP is their magazine, and they issue that, is it 4 times a year, I believe, with the WHIP.
And it always has great pictures and has really informative articles about driving and some history of the carriages, plus the current events that are coming up. So you can, and also we have American Driving Society has different local clubs, so it has the local clubs in there, so you can find friends, driving friends in your area.
And you know who's on the cover of this latest WHIP?
Is it Anna Koopman?
Yes, it is. And you know Anna Koopman, right?
Yeah, Anna is. I've known Anna since she was a little tiny baby. She's great. She's a super fun driver.
She's driving, and in this picture, she's driving her 9-year-old Morgan horse, Chandler Creek Eclipse.
Yep.
So
I think it's at a pleasure show. I think that was from Morven Park.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a pleasure show. I don't know. I don't know where it was. It doesn't really, I don't see.
Anna's father,
Old Dominion,
Bob.
ADT Challenge, Intermediate Champions. Yep.
Anna's father, Bob Koopman, is famous for his commercial turnout because he made himself a dog catcher van. And then he dresses up as this dog catcher and he puts on a handlebar mustache.
Does he have a whole bunch of dogs barking in the back?
He used to borrow a lot of Tamika and her babies and put the...
Oh, my.
Usually gets a lot of Jack Russell.
Yippee Jack Russells. That's funny.
Yep.
If you want to become a member, you can head over to the AmericanDrivingSociety.org, and we thank them for their continued sponsorship of the Driving Radio Show.
Well, it's time for another Tremont training session with Katie Cadwell. And this month, we're talking about organizing your horse trailer. So welcome, Katie, to the show again. I can't wait to hear you what you're talking about.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Glenn.
Katie, this is such an important thing. I think people all know by now when the show comes out that Glenn and I are prepping for a great big hurricane. So your topic today is perfect for us because we're trying to think about all the stuff we need to get organized with our horse before we get up and go somewhere.
Yes, and you know that we love organization. Organization and lists. And you can never have too many of them.
Right. And you know what I find is that lists, you're so nervous when you're getting ready to go somewhere, whether it's a show or, you know, evacuation. A list really helps you, you know, make sure you don't forget anything.
Well, our you know, we always want to work smarter, not harder. So if that means that we keep a list, and what we like to do is tack it to the inside of our tack trunks or, you know, whatever you're traveling with, so that you can have an easy reference that you have your medical stuff, just like a thermometer, leg wraps, maybe some poultice, some antibiotic cream, you know, every time you open your trunk that you can check that list and it's in that trunk.
When you get ready to go to a show, you have like one list that you make in the beginning of the season, and then you stick to that one list. You don't make a new one every time, right?
No, we try to have we keep our show kit or travel kit together. Mm-hmm. You try not to use that, you know, so you always have it there. First of all, the first thing on the list, we love our grooms or ourselves to have a notebook mm-hmm. that has in it what horses we worked. If you're working the team, what side they're on, so that you always can keep track of that. Little notes about where your curb chains are set and your bits and just little things like that, or that we need to put polo wraps on this horse, or just so you have all that information in front of you and no one has to question it. And it's the same thing with traveling. If we have the list on the inside of the tack trunk or in our tack room, that we can say, okay, we take the leg wrap bag, you take this many bags of feed for this many days, you know that you have it, and then it can set you up for the like success the whole season.
Yeah, because then you're not worrying about, oh my god, did I forget this, did I do that, blah blah.
No, and it doesn't matter if you're going to a pleasure drive or, okay, all these coaching people right now are traveling big distances. A bunch of people have gone to Maine for the summer or for a month, and you have to pack a lot of stuff to go for a month.
Right.
And you want to make sure you don't forget something silly, like an extra halter in case you break a halter.
Oh yeah. That's important.
Yes. Because, you know, we break halters. So we need to always carry an extra halter with us.
You know, I think
lead tanks. And if,
yeah, I think sometimes people, if they're just used to showing like maybe one horse, one riding horse, then you can kind of get away with not having a huge list. But once you start doing multiples and you have carriages, or if you're evacuating, you know, and you're taking every horse in the barn and you have help that may or may not know your horses, having this list and a little notebook, what everybody needs, it can relieve so much stress, because then you know the horse is getting taken care of properly.
Sure, because you guys are in the boat now, like you said, you might have to quickly get out. Mm-hmm. So if you have a notebook that had the horse's feed, their supplements, preferences, even like if you're stuck somewhere and someone has to run out and get you feed and you have a horse that won't eat pellets, you could have a quick reference guide to that to say, oh, wait a minute, but Buffy doesn't eat the sweet feed. I need to get her pellets.
Right.
You know, that you could easily say, and also when you're evacuating, what do you want to take? You want the horses to be safe, halters and lead shanks, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then just some medical. And then feed and hay if you can fit it. But the most important part of that is getting the horses away from the danger.
Yeah. And also, you know, some horses can't be in the trailer next to other horses, and the people helping you might not know that. Or some people, you know, a lot of times when you're really getting out last minute, you just send them off with the shipper, and the shipper has to know these things.
Yes. So then if you have a notebook or a hard copy or print it out, you could say to the shipper, okay, don't ever ship this horse next to that horse, because it will always cause a problem. It's just knowing your animal well enough that you eliminate these problems. And we need to do it in our everyday lives. When we ship to, even if we're shipping out to our horse park, which is 11 miles from us, we still need to pack the trailer with the proper equipment we need, harness cleaning, carriage cleaning, horses feed, you know, that you have everything that you could possibly need so you're not running around the showgrounds or a drive asking to borrow things.
Yeah. You know what else I think that can be really helpful is packing your carriages. People always are looking in other people's trailers to see how they're packing their carriages in, right? And So what advice do you have about that, packing your carriages and harness and all that?
So harness, I always try, either I have in my carriage trailer boxes on the wall, or get a rolling box. You know, you can get them at Lowe's that have a handle and they roll along to pack your harness in. So everything is there in the box. You don't have to worry about, is there a bridle sitting somewhere? Or you can pack it all in that one box. And then the carriages, the big thing about carriages is making sure they're tied down properly. That you don't want them to move, and that you're not pulling your front axle forward and your back axle back. Because otherwise you're splitting your carriage. You always want to cross your straps and take the front axle to the back tie down and the back axle to the front tie down. Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it crisscrosses under the carriage and doesn't pull the carriage into two pieces.
Yeah, because that's the weak point in our carriages. You know, I remember one time at Martin's, somebody, I'm not going to name names here, but somebody got this really, you know, the old carriages, some of them are really flimsy, and they did that. They tied it the opposite way, the front and the back, and with all that bumping on the road all the way back home to Virginia, it like split in half.
That's what happened, because some of these roads are pretty bumpy.
Yeah, especially if like you're in Pennsylvania or something. But that's a great tip. So you put the rear axle, you tie it forward, and the front axle, you tie that backwards with your tie downs.
And most modern carriages have a place for you to hook a tie down strap on.
Mm-hmm.
We use one of those fuzzies. We use like a fuzzy around the axle so that it doesn't scratch or rub anything. But always try to tie the carriages down on a 4-point system.
When you're getting ready for a show, you were saying this earlier, you have separate things for like that are just your show things and separate things that you keep at home. So you can always keep that in your trailer.
Well, that's what we try to do just to make our lives easier. We have a set of buckets that stays in the trailer, a set of feed bins. So then, and cleaning products for the carriage, for the harness. So then when we go to a show, all we need to put in is harness, feed, and the horses, because you already have that ready. And if you've kept track in your notebook, you would have noted, oh, we need more harness cleaner to put into the show kit, or we need more white shampoo to put into the show kit, but that you have a set aside or that lives in the trailer, a grooming kit, a harness cleaning kit, just because it makes your life much easier.
You know, I love your notebook idea because there are so many times when you have this great lesson and everything went super and you're like, that's what I need to do for the show. And so you need to be able to recreate that. But if you don't remember what link your curb chain was on, I mean, that one little thing can make such a huge difference.
Exactly. And then sometimes it's just knowing, okay, I only need 20 minutes of warm-up before I go into the dressage ring. Mm-hmm. Or I need to go out and walk for 20 minutes and then only warm my horse up for 10 minutes and then go in the dressage ring. Knowing little things like that and keeping them, because sometimes it's hard to remember that when you're put in the pressure situation. So if you actually had it written down that you could go through and say, oh, that's right, I always put the curb chain on 2 at a show, and I always walk my horse for 20 minutes before I start to warm up.
Yeah.
And you know, we all get in bad habits at home.
Yeah. And then sometimes if you have help with you that may not, you know, maybe they don't work with you at home, or you know, maybe your friend is coming with you to the show and they're trying to help, but you're in the carriage and you're like, oh, can you just, my curb chain fell off. Can you hook my curb chain back on? I mean, that is so important.
And they put it too tight, and then you ruined your whole, show round or cones or dressage. But you can say, we'll even go one step further. We have a backpack that when we're at a show, we have a backpack that specifically goes to cones, to dressage, to the show ring when we're showing. And that backpack has in it the notebook, water for the driver, fly spray, and a tail brush, and a towel.
Yeah.
And that backpack will go and an extra curd cane. So you always know that you have every piece of thing that you would need, because how hard is it sometimes when you're, say, even at Walnut Hill, if you have to run from the show ring all the way back to your stable?
Oh, yeah. Or Live Oak. That makes you're never going to make it.
You'd be in big trouble. So if you have that, like you said, and you have someone else helping you, even if it's just a pleasure drive, if you had someone else helping you, you could say, oh my God, I can't remember. Just take a quick look in the notebook. Or, okay, there's water in the knapsack. Can you just hand me a water?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we try to set ourselves up for success.
Yeah, I think that really is it. If you're good at making lists in a journal, that's setting yourself up for success, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yes, and then you can just concentrate on your animal.
You know what I think also is helpful for you as a trainer is if your students have a notebook and a journal, because some of your students you probably only see at shows or infrequently. So you can better help them because they can say, like what you might see on the day, you might give them some advice and they can say, oh, you know what, Katie, this is what we did last time. And I think this, then you can work through those issues. Well, Katie, thanks so much. This has been such great information. And I think if you're not already keeping a journal, I think it's a great day to start. And I think this is going to be great information for Glenn and I if we have to get out and run from the hurricane. We might see you next week in Southern Pines.
Stay safe in the hurricane.
Well, a while back, we had Roger McFarland on of Greenflower Botanicals to talk about CBD oil for horses. And I know some of you missed that, or it's been a while ago. And we wanted to revisit it because CBD oil has come up so much. And I'm sure you've seen it in your practice. And I want to talk to you a little bit about what you've seen since then. But let's replay that, and then we'll come back and talk to Dr. Wendy about CBD oil.
Well, the number one question I keep getting from clients is, what is CBD oil and how can it help my pets? So I am happy that we have Roger McFarland from Greenflower Botanicals to join us today to tell us how CBD oil works and how it can help your animals. So welcome, Roger.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dr. Ying. I appreciate being on the show and everything you guys are doing for our loved animals, members of our family.
Here on the Horse Radio Network, not only do we as riders and drivers have aches and pains, but of course our animals have aches and pains. And I think that people are so drawn to CBD oil lately because they see the benefits that humans are getting and they do want to share that with their animals, but there's not a lot of information out there about using CBD oil in animals. So can you give us a little insight on that?
I can give you the best that I have, but you're really correct in that there's a lot of need for more research, especially in the area of veterinary use of CBD. But what we do know is that all mammals have this incredible thing called an endocannabinoid system, which seems to have been made specifically for these cannabinoids to join in these receptors. And anyway, we find those receptors in nature, primarily in the cannabis plant, where we find all these wonderful cannabinoids of which CBD is a part. And so that, interestingly enough, interacts in this system that's in all mammals, and that system is really very pervasive and was discovered in the 1980s in Israel, and it regulates and kind of dovetails in with your endocrine system and your immune system and your central nervous system, so forth and so on. So if you've come across CBD, you probably heard or read, you know, it's good for this and this. It seems like it's good for everything. Mm-hmm. And I know initially that turned me off from it.
Right. Like, how can it be good for everything?
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like snake oil, and most of us push away from it. I know I did in the beginning. But the real key to understanding it is the endocannabinoid system, how these cannabinoids react with that system, but also how that system as a whole creates a balance and really kind of works with almost every other system in your body to create balance and promote health and vitality. So therefore, I take a little bit of CBD, I may have a headache and my headache goes away, or my backache goes away, or my anxiety diminishes. And that's because of this overall effect that it has in the body's constant. Well, I'll just put it this way. You know, the body's been created to heal itself. Right. And so it really just supports what the body wants to do.
Yeah, you know, it's very similar to our theory of Chinese medicine with the yin and the yang that has to stay in balance mm-hmm. for health. So, like, when you talk about homeostasis in the body, if you have, like when you're saying you have a headache or a migraine, well, maybe you have your blood pressure is too high and that's what's causing the migraine. So you need to, you don't want to take a drug that just lowers your blood pressure, which is how traditional pharmaceuticals work. In Chinese medicine, we would try to do something to regulate the body so that your blood pressure goes back to normal. So decreasing too much yang and increasing your yin to balance your body. And when I look at the research about CBD oils, I feel like it is on that Chinese medicine principle. Like, it's not just going to do one thing like a pharmaceutical that may affect negatively another part of your body. It works on the whole system to kind of regulate everything and keep you in balance.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about Chinese medicine other than it fascinates me. Mm-hmm. But it's actually in that literature that we first hear about cannabis to begin with. I want to say something like 2700 BC. Mm-hmm. You know, have some Chinese emperor. I'll mess it up if I try to remember his name. but he began to document different kinds of plant remedies and things of that nature. And it's mm-hmm. actually the first documentation of cannabis as medicine is right. in that Chinese medicine literature. So that's fascinating.
And now, so we know how it can help our pets and animals. What now, Greenflower? One of the things I really like about your company is that, first of all your CBD oil is from hemp that's grown free of pesticides on family farms in the United States. Because one of the things that I always worry about when you're looking at CBD oil is, do you know where it comes from? And also, there's also the possibility of heavy metal contamination and pesticide contamination. So, so can you explain a little bit about how you've sourced your CBD oil?
Sure. We, of course, I think maybe one of the more important things to know about us is that we kind of were drug into the business. And all for personal, very serious personal medical reasons. And so the thing that motivates us every day as a company, it truly is to help people. And in the quest to do that, we take where we source our hemp from, as well as how and particular standards that we follow in formulating our products. We take that very seriously. And so, you know, first step is hemp is a bioaccumulator. So whatever is in the soil ends up in what you're ingesting. So it has to be pesticide-free and grown to the highest standards. We'd love to call it organic, but all those standards and things aren't kind of worked out totally yet. Mm-hmm. But the products are all sourced pesticide-free. And beyond that, they go through a third-party lab test from the supplier, but also once it hits us and our custody chain, it goes to a third party lab, and every product has a lab report showing the various pesticides and heavy metals, molds, fungus, all of those mm-hmm. kinds of things.
Oh, that's great.
To be 100%. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, because you don't know. You can't tell those things from the label, you know?
No, and you can't, and honestly, you can't tell them either on our end when mm-hmm. you're receiving, you know, the raw extracts and things of that nature. Yeah. And so there's all kinds of reasons something dangerous might be, mm-hmm. you know, in an extract or a plant, and even growing with the best standards, it should all be tested, and just to make sure that what we're doing is, you know, promoting health, not taking it the other way around.
Right, right. Now, I know that some people have the question about what is CBD oil, hemp oil, and then there's also things on the market that are much cheaper that are like CBD oil from hemp seeds. Is there a difference between those?
Yeah. Sure. You can't get CBD from hemp seed, number one. So mm-hmm. I've not seen that, but you can extract CBD from the flower, and you can extract CBD from the stalk of a hemp plant, mm-hmm. but you cannot extract it from the seed. So hemp seed oil has its own benefits and things, but it's a really different animal than CBD oil.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have full spectrum CBD oil. What's the difference between that and the isolate?
Well, and again, another point that we're really dedicated to, when you isolate a compound out of a plant, you're kind of following the big pharma recipe book to the T. Mm-hmm. And they find something beneficial in nature, and then they want to take it out, isolate it, and charge us a fortune for it.
Right.
But the thing that gets missed there, which you'll obviously be able to appreciate in Chinese medicine, is that CBD is bonded to a whole lot of other synergistic compounds. So in our world, we call it the entourage effect, which mm-hmm. is kind of the sum total of all these parts working in concert together, because that's how they're found in nature. So full spectrum means it's a whole plant extract, so that when we pull the extract out, and not only does it have CBD in it, but it has other minor cannabinoids, CBN, CBDA, so forth, CBG, flavonoids, and of course, terpenoids. All this found, fatty acids, you know, essential oils, and all that found inside this wonderful plant. So we, as of now, we only sell full spectrum products. Mm-hmm. We may carry an isolate, but in the future, it would only be for reasons of product demand. But at the end of the day, if you're going to move towards CBD oil for healing purposes, we believe the best thing you can do is to get a really nice full spectrum oil that has all the different cannabinoids and terpenoids that are found bonded with the whole plant in nature.
Okay. Is there a difference between this for humans and this for animals, or it's the same oil?
Absolutely. Same oil.
Okay.
Yeah, because as mammals, we all have this endocannabinoid system. So we market our equine line separately for a couple of reasons. One, it helps simply with product selection. And then secondly, if we're dealing with horses, these are much larger animals than most humans, so there tends to be a need for larger volume, you know, of the product.
And you probably use the drops as opposed to them vaping, because that's probably not an option. Although my
you
pony
know, we,
probably
we
would.
Have an instructional. Yeah, we have an instructional video coming out on how to teach your horse how to vape. But so far, it's only been good for those funny video shows. But anyway, we're still working on that. But
okay,
yeah,
good.
Unfortunately, yeah. you're stuck with the oil.
Now, we do have to say one thing about CBD oil. It does contain a very, very low amount of THC, right? So,
yes, it does.
But it's not going to get you high, and it's not going to make the horses feel drugged. But That being said, it is, you still shouldn't use it if you're competing under zero tolerance drug rules, right?
Yes, I would say that's correct. And we were discussing that earlier. And you want to give yourself, it, you know, your animal at least a week or 2 weeks absence from the product. But yeah, we're trying to study that out and really find, you know, what those, what they're really looking for as far as the percentages by weight and those kinds of things. But but the best we can do right now is say, no, if you're competing, you're best to eliminate that from your horse's diet, you know, for a few weeks.
And Roger, how can people find you?
Well, they can go on the internet to greenflowerbotanicals.com. And there's an incredible amount of information there. One of the things I'll say about our website is we've spent an awful lot of time curating the best research that we can get our hands on. And so if you go there and you're looking for CBD for your horse or CBD for yourself or a specific condition, chances are good you may be able to find the up-to-date research, if there is any, surrounding that particular condition. And there's all kinds of information on how to dose and a much more thorough treatment of what CBD oil is and how it might benefit your animal more so than I was able to give today.
And they don't need a doctor's prescription to order anything. They can order right off your site, right?
Yep, they sure can. So we ship to all 50 states. There's no prescription needed. And we obviously do recommend that if you can, to work as close with your veterinarian as you can, so that it gives you that guidance and their knowledge, as well as helping them see and help us all to kind of see how CBD may be effective in certain areas or not in, in other areas. So we always encourage you to involve your veterinarian.
Right. This is one time when, if my clients come to me and say, well, I read it on the internet, I will not be aggravated with them. There's a lot of good information there. And you have a, do you have a, you know that happens, right?
well, I'm just saying, I can only imagine it, you know, I can only imagine what you must go through.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and I hope you come back again soon.
So, Dr. Wendy, you know, it's all very interesting. Listen to Roger, and obviously quality is a big factor in CBD, and we talked about that with him too. So what are you seeing in your practice? What are you using it for the horses? What's the story?
Yeah, I'm using it on the horses, and I'm actually using it on myself. I have a horse that has EPM, and he has had a relapse of his EPM, and we call that Sidewinder's disease, because his relapse of his EPM, he has some cranial nerve issues, so he's kind of, he has some problems with his balance and his awareness in space. And that usually happens even if they are, you know, you've killed the EPM organism. It's an inflammatory disease, kind of like what you experience with Lyme's disease.
Yeah, my neurological form.
Right. You know how you have that flare up every once in a while? That's because you have inflammation in your body and your nerves are inflamed and it's stimulating them, not because you have Lyme actively attacking it. So the CBD oil really helped a lot. I noticed that he is more aware. Like for a while, he was kind of out of it. And it's really sad to see your horse like that, you know, to see that. Like sometimes I put his food out and I have to tell him, like, hey, your food's over here. Like I have to wave my hands. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, how many times do you put your horses food out and they don't come galloping over to attack you for it, right?
Yeah, never with Scooter.
And I also have this spool, this giant spool for the goats to jump and play on. And every once in a while, he gets himself like stuck in the spool with his chest against the round circle part.
But this sounds like a lot like me when I'm having a bad day.
Yeah, and he can't get out from the spool. So I have to go out there, and he's like screaming to me, I'm stuck in the spool, because he can't figure out how to back up. That happens with neurologic horses. So I have to roll the spool out of the way for him to get out. But I've noticed that the CBD oil is really helping him with, he's looking brighter.
How much do you give him?
Well, that's always the most common question.
It is, yeah.
On the Green Flower site, there's a great article about how you titrate this, because it's dose dependent, right? So you start out with a certain dose and then you titrate it up till you notice an effect, and then you can go down a little bit. And it's like the turmeric. Remember we talked about doing the turmeric? You give it, and then when you notice an effect, you start backing it off, and then you see what dosage range works best. And you know, as Dante, like, what he has may or may not be reversible, right? Just like you're living with chronic Lyme. So some days or sometimes when he has a flare up, I might have to give him more. And then sometimes I can give him less. Also different times of the year, he might need more, right? So like now in the summer, we have these bugs and they're stimulating his allergies. So he has a lot of things causing inflammation. Or like he also has Cushing's, unfortunately, right? So in the fall, horses with Cushing's tend to get worse. So I might need to give him more CBD oil during certain times of the year than others.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, there you go. And I hope that that helped some of you who are looking for, you know, for that as an option.
Oh, I have to tell you one more thing.
Yeah.
I forgot. I also got the CBD cream. Remember I had horrible tennis elbow for a while?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, we played together and you were having trouble.
Yeah, and I remember I had to wrap my arm with that wrap, because I'm not going to not play tennis.
Right.
You know? And so I used that CBD oil on my elbow and it really made a huge difference. And then I also, use it. I have a little patch of, I have psoriasis, which is like, kind of like eczema, but it's like it's like your skin has this overgrowth. It's like an autoimmune disease. And I, every once in a while, get a little patch flare up and I put that on it and it immediately stops the itching. I don't know why, but I'm just telling you, it works great.
There you go. Well, take it from Dr. Wendy. She said it works on her. Now, we can't guarantee it's going to work on you. And of course, I think CBD oil is legal in all states, but at this point. But you can go
to
Green.
The cream does not make you high.
That's right. Just helps your elbow. So they can go to greenflowerbotanicals.com. This is not a commercial. I wish it was, but it's not. It's not a commercial. It's just, it's a company that we know and that we know makes good product. And that's
all of their product is grown in the United States.
That's right.
And they also test each batch so they know the active ingredients and the efficacy.
Very good. So let's go and wrap up the show now. We have really bad ads tomorrow. Jamie will be here, so get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We'll be giving away our prize tomorrow, as well as announcing three new prizes for the month of September.
Ooh.
So you definitely want to tune in for that. Again, it's Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. But you can find all of Dr. Wendy Ying's products at
drwendyying.com.
Very good. DrWendyYing.com. Go take a look around. If you need something for your doggy or your horsey or your pets, Dr. Wendy Ying has it over there. So that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Now,
keep the shiny side up.
Yay, Wendy on cue.